Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mayhem.
That's not good. Looks like I'm gonna have to save your planet.
You're mine, Hedgehog.
You'll never catch me.
You break!
How are you not dead?
I have no idea.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, this one's cute. Let's keep him.
Ah, come on!
You've got car insurance, right?
Gotta go fast. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Eggman Williams.
I knew you were going to go with Eggman. I just knew it.
As you heard, we got a great show in store, as we're going to be talking about the recently released, as well as much talked about, Sonic the Hedgehog. So stick around as we dive into that.
New episodes drop every Wednesday morning, so check us out on your favorite streaming platform or over on filmlosophers.com. You can also connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. But like I said, we're going to be talking about a really interesting movie that's been kind of the crux of a lot of conversations, and that is Sonic the Hedgehog. Yes, your ears are not deceiving you. That is Gangster's Paradise.
Well, what song fits Sonic better than Gangster's Paradise?
Well, apparently to some people. And we're going to talk about a lot of those parts and a lot of why it's not a good choice. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
Based on the global blockbuster video game franchise from Sega, Sonic tells the story of the world's speediest hedgehog as he embraces his new home on Earth. In this live-action adventure comedy, Sonic and his new best friend Tom team up to defend the planet from the evil genius Dr. Robotnik and his plans for world domination. That wasn't really his plan, though.
I mean, you don't know. Possibly.
Synopsis was right up until that last line.
Directed by Jeff Fowler, the film stars Ben Schwartz as the voice of the titular character, alongside James Marsden, Tika Sumpter, and Jim Carrey. The first trailer caused a massive fan backlash. On May 2nd of 2019, director Jeff Fowler announced on Twitter that Sonic's design was going to be altered to make the character, quote, the best he can be. The movie's scheduled release moved from Thanksgiving weekend 2019 to Valentine's Day 2020. When a new trailer was released on November 12th of 2019, fans and viewers alike praised Sonic's new look.
Well, that's really easy to do when the first design was literally someone's nightmare.
I think that's putting it nicely. It looked like somebody's meme. You know, the first design didn't even look remotely like what you would expect out of a movie version. Because we've seen it from time to time in, like, Wreck-It Ralph and in the video games, obviously. And this thing looked literally like every person's drawing of what the Sonic character would look like in jest, not even in seriousness, like just trying to be silly.
Yeah.
And that's what we ended up with. So
that design was kind of like Frankenstein's monster of assortment of real pieces of something, like, you know, it had human teeth, and that was so upsetting. Saying.
Well, I don't know if it had human teeth. But
look at those teeth. Like, when it screamed in that trailer, it was human teeth, and it was upsetting.
Well, speaking of upsetting, according to animator Max Schneider, Paramount expected that Sonic fans would object to the redesign, but that general audiences would not care, as had been the case with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that was released in 2014. He said Paramount felt the design gelled with the real-world setting and characters. So what I'm to believe from what this animator is saying is that Paramount actually thought this was a bad idea to do a redesign, and that they were probably going to be wasting money doing a redesign because nobody was going to care. And from the backlash, I think that should have been the first clue that people cared. And especially when you're working with a property that's been around for decades. You're looking at, what, at least 30 years?
Yeah, Sonic's been around the block for a bit.
Yeah, and you're talking about creating a film that personifies him as best as possible. And I think it's safe to say that after the massive fiasco of actually seeing a video game being translated into a movie, like, successfully,
mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say the only thing that we've actually had that's been good has been Wreck-It Ralph, and Wreck-It Ralph is
Detective
not even...
Detective Pikachu is closer.
Not even.
Well, there's an actual Detective Pikachu game!
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the movie.
What?
I mean, I don't know.
We're talking about translations of video games into movies.
Detective Pikachu is okay. It's okay.
Yes, and it is the best video game movie of an actual property.
Yeah, but
it holds the title because there's nothing else to contend with it.
I don't know. I don't believe that.
Like, we'll throw something out because you can't have Wreck-It Ralph because he's not based on anything.
But there are actual video games
but
in it.
But it's not based on... No, like, the main character has to be from a video game.
And that's where the rub is that there's no proper video game adaptation for the fact that unless you are actually doing a direct adaptation of a storyline, you're not going to get a perfect adaptation. You're not even going to get a good adaptation. Like I said, the best thing that we've had so far has been Wreck-It Ralph, the Wreck-It Ralph films.
I feel like that doesn't count.
Because they're actually representing the characters in the video games, as opposed to, like, Ryan Reynolds voicing Pikachu, which was wrong in so many ways. And it's like, all right, we got ourselves a little yellow Deadpool. Okay, cool. But I don't know. There's a lot of things that just didn't gel with Pokemon Detective Pikachu, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's, like, perfect. I'm just saying it's closer than Wreck-It Ralph because it's actually based on something. Well, Wreck-It Ralph is just pieces.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Probably not. But... But talking about Sonic the Hedgehog, yes, this is a very much debated film, and not to mention the genre in itself. Video game adaptations, it's hard to come by because, just like we were discussing here, many people take to the arguments of, like, you can't make a proper adaptation of a video game because there's so many variants in terms of levels and directions and character arcs and blah, blah, blah. And I think it's been a little bit easier to traverse into the more newer ones because you don't have to have a direct, like, adaptation of the actual property to be, like, successful. For instance, like, take, for instance, The Witcher.
Mm.
The Witcher, which is one of the newer series on
Netflix,
takes from the storyline of Geralt in The Witcher games. And because he's got, it's a sandbox style game, so any adventure makes sense, and that's why this one doesn't really tie into any, you know, specific, you know, mission or task in the video games. But it works out kind of well because people like it. Vice versa, on the other side of that spectrum, if you have something that's kind of simple, like, say, Super Mario Brothers, and then you're like, all right, well, let's turn this into a movie. You would think it's pretty straightforward, but the pretty straightforward aspect of it won't sell tickets. It won't put butts in seats. So,
but that, oh my gosh, Super Mario Brothers, though, they made Yoshi a velociraptor, basically. Oh gosh, it was we have to steer away from this. That's a whole other podcast.
So, talking about Sonic,
so bad.
Yeah, we actually had a chance to go see it this past weekend, and just for those people who need to know, or just for a little bit of the knowledge for those folks out there, the budget for this film was at $85 million. The domestic box office weekend actually brought it in opening weekend at $58 million. So that's not bad.
I don't suppose you know if that 85 includes the redesign or not.
I'm pretty sure it does, which the redesign wasn't much. It actually wasn't a lot of work that they put in.
It's probably just mostly time and stuff.
Yeah, I think they said it was like $5 million for redesign work.
Oh.
Which isn't much. But then at the same time, they've also stated that the film wasn't fully done yet when they released the trailer, so it was easy to do the redesign. So, I mean, people can say whatever they want. Studios will say whatever they want. That's fine. That's not the issue. We'll get into what the issue is as we dive deeper into this conversation. But me and Spencer, we got a chance to check out the film this past weekend. And in all honesty, I'm going to be like as blunt as possible. My expectations going into this film, I honestly thought it was going to bomb. I just thought with the track record for video game movies, as we just mentioned, the pile of games that have actually been somewhat satisfactory, if not satisfactory, at least amusing, is so small that I don't even know if there's anything in the pile. Whereas you have this
it's
dead...
It's two movies. It's Wreck-It Ralph and Detective Pikachu.
Pretty much. Compared to the pile of attempts done by studios and executives and filmmakers, everything from... Postal by what's his name, that weirdo
Weeball.
Dude.
He did like a majority of what people consider bad video game movies.
He did, because he also did House of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
He did a bunch of ones that just really
so many.
And then you got things like
Resident Evil series,
which the first one was okay. The rest of them kind of got a little repetitive. If I'm being completely honest. From our previous conversation, I would probably have to say Resident Evil is probably the most successful video game movie for me. The first Resident Evil. Seeing as it actually kind of stuck to the storyline of the video game.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you ever played the video game.
I played the video game.
Yeah.
I never saw the movie because it's a video game movie. And why would I?
Well, because...
No.
You weren't...
No.
Smart?
Ready.
The movie is actually good. Mila Jovovich is good in that one. Michelle Rodriguez is in that one. It's actually halfway decent. But like I said, the pile of successful video game movies is so much smaller than the dead carcass pile of like attempts between Super Mario Brothers being the large foundation of that cake to like to everything we said from Uwe Boll, the other Resident Evil movies. You have so many attempts at all over the place. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. And so, honestly, with that in mind, I honestly did not think much of this film. I went in with the mindset of, well, the trailer was the first, you know, burning dumpster to set this whole thing in motion. So it has to probably follow suit with that. There's no way any redesign would fix that or make it better. So, flat out, I didn't think I was going to have a good time. I literally set the bar so low, you could probably walk over it on the way out the door.
Yeah.
So
that's where my bar was, too. Because, like, honestly, if you have never seen this trailer, watch the very first one from April of 2019, not the redesign one, because it is just... I could talk about that trailer for the rest of this podcast because it's so baffling.
We actually just saw that trailer right before we started to kind of get like the fired up juices going because it is. It's such a bad trailer.
That you want to know why you heard Gangster's Paradise to the intro of this? It's because that's what was the trailer for the first Sonic the Hedgehog. Gangster's Paradise! Why? Of all the things you could choose, it doesn't make any sense.
And mind you, we'll get into the
actual movie.
Well, yeah, we're gonna get into that too. But the reasons why that didn't really succeed as well. Honestly, I personally feel like a lot of people were taking the trailer as the full first impression, and much like you and I. And looking at it and like, all right, well, this is it. This is all that there is to offer and kind of based everything that could possibly come afterwards on that. And mind you, yes, there are experiences with this before, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But before we get too far into the review, I want to talk about first impressions out of the theater. We went to go see it, sat in the theater, lights went down, movie went up, saw the movie. First thoughts once the lights came up?
Shocked. Like, utter shocked that I actually liked this movie. Like, it was one of those ones where it's like, am I okay? Is something wrong with me? Like, that's the level it was at.
I have to agree. I was in that same position of like, maybe. Like, I was literally reevaluating every sense of credibility I had in the industry, because I was like, I have been hard on several movies out there. I have allowed myself to endorse certain films and then show up here or write a review that tore the movie to shreds. And I don't mind doing that. I don't mind being brutally honest. And I walked out.
We've all gotten that from the intro to this show. And every time you come up with a weird name for me.
It's true. But oddly enough, I walked out of the theater and I'm like, I don't have a reason to be mad. Like, is it the lack of sleep? Or is it because I'm hungry and I'm glad the movie's over? That's where the joy is coming from? I couldn't understand it. And then I realized that I had did something that Spencer does more times than I do. And that is set the bar so low that literally all the movie had to do was just lift its head to meet the bar.
Okay, I don't do this all the time.
You do this a lot.
No, I don't. Like I did it for mostly DC movies.
Not even. Not even. And I think, here's the thing. I think when it comes to certain films, like, I think there's a certain caliber of expectations for movies based on what it's attempting to do. If I'm looking at, all right, this director is going to come out and he's going to make every effort. We're talking Steven Spielberg, Christopher Nolan, James Cameron, you know, size director, and they're going to do a remake of Gone with the Wind, and they're going to put every best foot forward and make it as whatever. And then they're going to dish it out there. If it's, number one, an A-list director, I'm going to assume they're going to get an A-list cast, and it's an A-list story. So, in my mind, I'm assuming this film is going to be A-list. My expectations are now beyond the ceiling. They're, like, all the way up there. And that's where, like, any part of that that does not land, in my mind, makes that film fall short. It's somewhat of a failure. This movie created something of such low expectations for me with that first trailer that I think I was okay coming into a really bad movie. It's like, and it's funny because this was kind of on par in terms of its playfulness and its kid friendliness, almost on par as like with Dora, except without a lot of the annoying repetitive parts and the jokes that never hit. This one actually had funny moments.
That was shocking.
That was very shocking. The fact that I found myself chuckling to the things that this little CGI blue creature was saying. Like, I found myself actually smiling at times throughout the film. Now, like I said, I don't know if that's because either A, lack of sleep, or B, I was literally, like, grasping at any form of a lifeline this movie could throw out.
No, I'll back up. Like, there were some actual good jokes in this movie.
And it's true. I mean, I'm not one to mince words and say, well, it was okay. It was, you know, but, you know, it was really, you know, had a horrible dialogue and all this is bad, whatever. But it was okay. Like, if it was bad, it was bad. I don't mind saying it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will shush a baby. But still.
He will, and that's not a joke. I've seen him do it.
But the fact remains is that this movie actually sort of impressed me.
Understandable.
I don't, you know. And the thing is that it's not a very complicated story.
Nope.
It's not a very complicated cast. You got Ben Schwartz, made famous from Parks and Rec, voicing Sonic. You had James Marsden playing the sheriff of a small town who wants to go to the big city. You have the supportive wife in Tika Sumpter. And you have the maniacal evil genius in Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. You know, Dr. Robotnik is looking for this source of where this big energy thing happened, finds Tom very quickly, who happened to had tranquilized Sonic, ends up helping him get him to San Francisco because he ends up dropping his coins on the top of the San Francisco building,
mm-hmm.
Accidentally through one of the wormholes that he creates. And then, you know, the film gets underway. And that's literally how it starts. You know, it creates a little bit of dialogue and there's a little bit of back and forth, but in all honesty, that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then everything in between is just, you know, crazy antics and watching Sonic go really fast and do the whole everybody's going in slow motion and I'm still going normal and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, hey, it's very interesting that the redesign really made that much of a change in my mindset. Because watching that trailer again, I'm going to be honest, that trailer made me mad. Like, I grew up, like, my first gaming system was both a Nintendo and a Sega Genesis.
Okay.
I had both of them, and I remember I loved Sonic. I played Sonic all the time. So Sonic was very, you know, known in my household. And I took one look at that creature, and I was like, that literally looks like every single person on Twitter's drawing of what they thought Sonic was going to look like being fun. And I'm like, what? Did these designers look at these drawings? And I'm like, oh, well, that works. Yeah, we could just use that one. Does that one work for you? That works for me.
Yeah, it's, you just Google Sonic or Sanic, see what comes up, copy and paste. You've made a movie. Congratulations.
Just make several different versions so it looks like it's moving. Just and it's true. There is something to say about the trailer. Because here's the thing. The movie is it's fun. It mm-hmm. actually has a little bit of cheesy, heartfelt goodness to it. I mean, it's definitely made for kids.
Yeah.
That's a given. So kids will get a really big kick out of it. And the movie kind of leads you on this kind of like fun quest of what if Sonic was in our world and he was in danger and found a human counterpart to go and you know, help him get away from the evil guy. Like, it's almost like seeing Sonic come into his own to the confidence level that he has in like all the video games and the TV shows and whatnot. You ever saw the cartoon series?
Sonic X is the one I saw.
Oh, boo.
That's the one with the goggle mask on.
That's horrible. But it's easy to offload this movie because of what happened with that first trailer.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a lot of people know this, so we were going to take the time to kind of educate people a little bit. Trailers, so I don't know if a lot of people know this, but trailers are actually created by a secondary company hired by the studio. So it's not the studio that makes the trailers. And I was doing some research, and I had always been a fan of like the people who do this because I've known for a little bit. The people who create trailers, they actually get paid hundreds of thousands of dollars just to cut a little 2.5 minute work.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, mind you, the design, the CGI design of Sonic, that was all the studio.
Right.
But as we pointed out earlier, why the heck would you put Gangster's Paradise, I'm sorry, Gangster's Paradise in a Sonic the Hedgehog trailer? That makes no sense at all. Sonic is not Gangsta.
Plus, honestly, it was distracting.
Are you kidding? It didn't fit. It was horrible. Like, the way they would, like, staccato that riff.
Why would you... No, that's not how that song horrible. Flows.
Like, what are you thinking? It made no sense, and it was, like, grinding on my ears. Like, I hated everything about that trailer the moment I saw it. There was no ands, ifs, or buts. I did not want to see this movie when I saw that trailer. And I'm pretty sure I was not the only one. In fact, I'm pretty sure there are still people who carry that. And it's kind of like, you have to understand, sometimes people make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And companies can make trailers that can usually mislead or, sadly, can derail the success of a film. And there's been several examples of this in the past. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the original official trailer to The Matrix.
Yeah, I watched it slightly before because I saw this list of trailers and I'm like, I don't remember any of these.
The official trailer, the original official trailer for The Matrix, it's 2.5 minutes long.
Yes, it's very long.
The first 2 minutes are literally voiceovers with words on the screen and images, like brief half-second clips from the film, like fade to black and then another half-second clip and fade to black and like living in a world where blah, blah, blah. And Keanu Reeves says, whoa, every 5 seconds. Like, I don't know. But, like, it just seems so boring.
And it is. Like, for The Matrix, as action-y of a movie that is.
Yeah.
It's a really boring trailer.
That movie has that incredible, like, technological advancement in filmmaking, usage of the bullet time style of filming, which that movie first coined that, calling it bullet time, like, totally, you know, revolutionizing the way filmmakers make movies. And it's within the first 5 minutes of the film, and that isn't seen, or that isn't even mentioned in the trailer until like almost after 2 minutes into it. And it's like, oh my gosh, will you please stop talking and show me action in this thing? And it sat, thankfully, The Matrix had enough star power to, you know, draw in people and, you know, really keep the people coming in despite the horrible trailer. But then things like Crimson Peak comes off as this horror, like crazy horror film, like that's a period piece. And me personally, it's a great movie. I've seen it. It's by my guy, Guillermo del Toro. Yep. It's actually like a gothic romance film.
Oh.
But people don't pay, like a macabre gothic romance. But you wouldn't get that out of the trailers or the marketing. Guillermo del Toro himself has come out and said that he hated the way the marketing went for that movie. Same thing with, I don't know if anybody here has seen the Kingsman Secret Service. That movie, based on a comic book, actually, a graphic novel, is very graphic and very... has a lot of like colorful language, and the trailer makes it seem like it's this squeaky clean kind of, you know, James Bond-esque movie.
I'm gonna be real honest. So like, I didn't remember any of the trailers in this like little list yet you have in the notes. So I was like, okay, let me like check these out. And like, I watched The Matrix 1 and The Kingsman trailer, and I kept checking the time to see how much was left in the trailer. Like, they're only 2 minutes and 30 seconds, but it's a long 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
It is. And it's like...
And then I stopped.
And the thing is, mind you, Mark Millar made, like, lightning in a bottle when he created this graphic novel. And...
Oh, for Kingsman?
Yeah, it's based on it's based on Kingsman Secret Service graphic novel.
Yeah.
And Mark Millar pulls no punches in like the amount of graphic violence and the language and just the intensity of it all. Mm-hmm. And it's very raw in its ability to tell its story. Yet, the movie mirrors that very well. Like, oh my gosh, that scene with oh my gosh, why am I drawing a blank? With Colin Firth, the scene where he's in the church.
Oh man,
he literally like decimates every single person in that church, and it is wild. And it's maybe seen in the trailer for like a blip. And it's like, man, this is nothing like the movie. This trailer makes it seem like it's this squeaky clean type of thing. Another great misdirect out there was Drive by Nicholas Winding Refn. Great director, very unique. He's a very niche director. He's the one who did Neon Demon, which I don't think we covered on the show, but I got a chance to see it a while back. It was a very interesting movie. But Drive is made to look like this type of heist movie and has nothing to do with that. Nothing at all. And if you're familiar with Nicholas Winding Refn, he does not make simple movies. He makes very unique, very niche, very out there type of films, and this was not one of them. And the one I kind of wanted to just highlight as well, which sadly the marketing on this movie and the trailer was so bad and the marketing was so misleading that it actually had an effect on ticket sales, on box office ticket sales, was The Iron Giant.
Fun fact, I was watching the 2015 trailer for like the re-release.
Yeah.
It's almost the same trailer as the one they released theatrically.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt at all. And mind you, this movie came out around the same time of The Matrix, so you probably think maybe they were from the same company. But this movie did so bad at the box office. Like, the movie altogether was a budget of $50 million. Do you know how much they made in box office numbers?
$5
million? $31
million. Oh, that's pretty good.
Like, for this being a Warner Bros., for it being as awesome as it is, because you've seen it, I've seen it, this is a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I literally quote this movie at least once a week. You know, you stay, I go, no following. Like, I tell that to my dog at least every other day. You know, it's one of those movies that just completely floors you, and it's so beautiful, yet you don't get any of that in the trailer. And that made such a huge effect or a huge impact in the people who went to go see it, that it completely derailed the success of this movie. And it's the truth in saying, you know what? Trailers can mislead and derail the success of a film.
Oh, yeah. I know trailers can mislead, Disney. I'm looking at you and your stupid Endgame trailers.
I was actually going to leave that over to you because I know, like, there's...
I'm still mad about that.
And it's true. Like, mind you, there are companies, there are studios who... they give whatever they want their trailers to have. They give whatever they have to the trailer production companies.
Yeah, that's what you should do. Give what you have, not tell them to make stuff up.
Well, see, that's the thing, though. They only put together what was given to them. So, you know, they intentionally gave them that wrong clip.
Disney.
Does that even, like, fire you up more, knowing the fact that it wasn't... Even though you could probably put it on the trailer production company.
I still blame Disney, because someone would have been like, oh yeah, this is fine from Disney. Like, it's all Disney's fault.
But I think the bottom line is that this type of thing can really play an effect on how people perceive the movie that they're wanting to go see. You know, and plain and simple, if you're somebody who's like, well, you know, I want to see a movie. I want to see something that really looks like it's got a lot of action, maybe a good, you know, a good dynamic of like a man and a woman in the team or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And they look up a trailer and the trailer is complete garbage. They're like, well, yeah, that's not what I want. That movie might be the best thing in the world, but that trailer is going to be the one that ends up, you know, making it or breaking it for the film.
Right.
You know, it's the first impression, and that's essentially what all trailers are. They're first impressions of the film that people are going to go see. And you look at something like this, and mind you, I honestly would have completely pushed aside this movie. I would have been okay skipping it. I would have been deadly, like, fine with, like, all right, I'd rather just review some older movie and skip Sonic altogether.
Oh. Well, I wasn't going to let that happen.
But the fact remains is that the studio themselves actually took the time to hear fans. And they said, we're going to fix this. We're going to do our best to fix it. Made the effort and then delivered a new serving, if you want, a new portrayal of the Blue Speedster in a new light and a different design. And I have to admit, that is admirable, in my personal opinion. Like, for a studio to do something like that, that's actually really cool.
Yeah, like, it's like the bare minimum. Like, because think about it this way. From their perspective, they're like, ugh, they're already complaining about the movie and it's not even out yet. Are they going to go give us their money like we want them to? No. Okay, well, I guess we could spend $5 million so we can eke a little bit out of it and maybe set up a sequel and, like, break even somehow. And that's how I see it. They're greedy. And that's why they changed it.
So you think they did it for their own gain?
Yeah, because otherwise, be like, no, this is our artistic interpretation of Sonic, and we will leave it as such.
So then let me ask you this. Would you have been happier if this movie had stayed the original way it had portrayed itself back when it debuted the first trailer in May?
No. But I'm saying, this is something for artistic integrity. If that's your like vision for something, stick with your guns. Don't just roll over because you want $20 million extra dollars.
I mean,
I would roll over. For
I was gonna say I would roll over too. Like if someone was like, "Yeah, I'll watch this and pay X amount of money, but you got to change some stuff." Like, well, I mean, all right, I can. I would discuss it. I would see where they're coming from and be like, "All right, well, maybe
you're giving them a lot of credit here."
No, I'm understanding their business model, and that is ka-ching. Like we need to make money. And it would be one thing if it was like, well, you know, like you said, this is what we created and I'm sure the studios will like it. But kind of what we mentioned earlier, those same people are the same people who are sitting on their hands because they thought they were going to have a chance to make a third Ninja Turtles movie. Yeah. And it never came about because that design is horrible.
I kind of blame it mostly on Megan Fox.
It's like creatures from the Black Lagoon, like just straight up. And then they make them, like, urban. Like, okay, I'm not going to get on this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle kick because I know that would be a horrible conversation to have. I can't stand Michael Bay and what he's done to my favorite childhood franchises. He's already ruined Transformers. He ruined Ninja Turtles. I hope he doesn't get a hold of this.
Hide your kids, hide your wife. Michael Bay's coming for your properties.
Oh, my gosh. Studios start closing their doors and windows. He's coming this way. But yeah, I have to, going back to the movie, like I have to say, the movie was fun. It was lighthearted. There were several scenes where you could just sit back and enjoy the film. And you got to recognize, obviously, this movie's made for a younger generation. This movie is made to introduce the you know, the character of Sonic to that demographic that maybe is not so familiar. Maybe they've seen dad or uncle or aunt or mom or really big brother play some Sonic game on one
not
version.
A recent one, unless it's Sonic Mania. Well, most Sonic game, Sonic has had a rough last 20 years.
That's the understatement of the decade. Like that last game that they made, that Sonic Mania game,
mm-hmm.
Horrible, like garbage. Like, I've seen more people spend their time, like, talking about the quirks and the issues with the game and the glitches rather than actually doing playthroughs.
Yeah, that's, like, the funnest part of a Sonic game nowadays is running into something horrible in it.
Well, thankfully, that wasn't the case for this movie. But I think just kind of talking about this and kind of bringing it around, like, I have to admit, Ben Schwartz, great job as a voice performer for Sonic.
You know, it sounds like they even did different takes or something with him because, like, Ben Schwartz in the first trailer compared to, like, how he sounds in the second one and the movie, he sounds way more animated.
Oh, I have no doubt that there's, like, different takes of the film, different takes of certain scenes. I wouldn't doubt that. Like, I would honestly say, yeah, they probably went back and had him re-record lines. because of the fact that the first time around made him look
sleepy, kind of, to be perfectly honest.
That's, yeah. Sleepy is a good way to put it. He seemed too lax.
Yeah. Like, that, the first Sonic was, like, about to fall asleep all the time. It's what, like, I got from the trailer. The one in the movie has so much energy. He is bouncing all over the place and is just ready to go. Ugh, gosh. I'm looking at a picture of original Sonic and he looks awful. Do you remember the legs poster?
That's what I'm saying. People took the legs poster and created the rest of it and made fun of it. And they're like, oh yeah, this is probably what he's going to look like. Ha ha ha. And it turned out to be true.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Especially there was like one poster that was done in silhouette. I have not seen this one, though. Okay. Oh, there was one that was done in silhouette. And people just like filled in the blank of what it would possibly look like.
Little did people know how close they were.
Most of them weren't as horrifying as what they actually put out, which is sad.
Why would you say sad? It's horrifying. It's like, look at this. Look at this. Look at it.
There's just so much space between the eyes.
Yeah, that's an... I mean, look at the hands, too, and the body form. It just...
No, like, the whole thing just doesn't make you feel good.
It doesn't. And we can attest to it because we're just like, yeah, gross. But yeah, I think Ben Schwartz does a really great job as the voice of Sonic. He makes it really fun, makes it really, you know, lively. It seems very much an innocent way to portray the Sonic character, which Sonic is an innocent character. He's a hero. He fights to save the animals and so forth. So I think he does a really great job of, you know, voicing this character. I think Jim Carrey has always been a maniacal person, crazy in the head. So I mean this with all love, Jim Carrey, if you're listening to this, please don't kill me. But I just, Jim Carrey always seems like...
Are you sure you want to say this?
I don't know.
Sonic could come after
you. He's going to show up under my bed or something. Like, I feel like Jim Carrey always seems like the type of person who could slip into a mindset of madness whenever he wants to. And that's not to say like he's already mad all the time, but it's to say that his flexibility as a performer, not just an actor, but a performer. Because I remember way back when he was on In Living Color.
Yeah.
Doing stuff like Fire Marshal Bill and his facial impressions. Like, I remember the first time he did Clint Eastwood, it scared the bejesus out of me. You know? And his whole like evolution from being a comedian to moving to movies and things like Ace Ventura, and moving into stuff like from Ace Ventura to Dumb and Dumber and all these different types of things. It's great to know that I've been a part of his filmography, like being alive and seeing his progression. But I think for him, kooky suits him.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
I think I agree with that. I don't know if I would have put that first interaction with him from the first trailer as like, this is how you should experience Jim Carrey in this movie, because he is coming in hot and fast, like,
yeah,
when he's first introduced. And it's kind of a lot to take in at once.
Which, mind you, that first, what you see in the trailer when he meets the major, whoever that military person is, that's literally your first introduction when we first see Dr. Robotnik. And mind you, he is extra throughout the entire movie.
His character is just... He's at 110% just going around.
All the time, but it works really well.
Yeah, when you can get a holistic like view of the character, it makes way more sense than just seeing like that one random bit.
Now, I do have to say, well, just real quick, I'll run through these other two. James Marsden, Tika Sumpter, great performers. James Marsden, he plays a funny side character. He's not so much the main character. He's a side character, as well as Tika Sumpter. She's in the movie for like a fraction of the time. Mm-hmm. So great job to those two. But like the real stars, you know, Ben Schwartz and Jim Carrey, you know, complete powerhouses in this movie. But I have to ask, what was the deal with Olive Garden?
Yeah, no, like, seriously, I'm glad you brought this up. Because there was some backdoor deal where they were putting in Olive Garden product placement the whole dang time.
Yeah, I was like, I it's been a while since I've been to an Olive Garden. I don't know if it's that good. Like
the United States gave someone an Olive Garden gift card. Why? We collect taxes, hand over physical cash at, like, least. I don't know. Like, I don't need this level of Olive Garden product placement in my movie.
It's really weird.
It's odd.
I don't know. And mind you, we're not going to do spoilers. We're not going to give away anything. The gist of the film is very fun, lighthearted. You'll have a great time. Take the kids to it. There is a mid-credit scene. I don't believe there's an end-credit scene.
I don't believe so.
So, but there is a mid-credit scene that you'll want to stay through at least once the main credits finish up. It'll transition over. But wrapping this whole thing up, like, honestly, I don't know where my head is at when it comes to my thinking for this film, because I don't know. I feel like I'm compromising my beliefs and my ethics when it comes to how I review, because I'm actually willing to give this movie a pass.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you.
I don't know. Is this like a Road to Redemption type thing? Like,
for video game movies?
Well, at least for this movie.
Like, maybe.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Would it be acceptable for you as a moviegoer and a movie reviewer if every time a trailer went out, if people voiced their opinions and the studios listened and they changed something every time, would you be okay in a world of that kind of accessibility?
That's a real, it depends, because like, sometimes people are on a bandwagon about something and it's a good idea. See Sonic for a good reason why. And sometimes people are on a bandwagon for a really bad reason. And I don't want like studios being like, oh, I guess we should take women out of these movies or something ridiculous because a whole bunch of people
are
being stupid.
Did you say women?
Yeah. You know how people get stupid about things in movies?
Sure. Okay.
Like, they'll just latch on to, like, something so idiotic and make a big deal out of nothing. And I'd hate for, like, studios to, like, bend to that level of pressure. So it's one of those things where it's, like, the studios kind of have to walk a fine line of, like, should we or should we not listen to these people?
And that's what I'm saying. Like, for this case, yeah, we had a win. Hmm. But then, what if you begin to open it up more and more to the public? Like, for me personally, I'm really in all honesty hoping this is the only time that ever happens. That it was just because of the massive backlash, like so large that it was difficult to not recognize it.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping this was, and I'm hoping this is the only time that happens, because I don't know if I could handle being in a world where every voice and every opinion
has a say in what movie
has a say
you get.
In what movie you see and how it ends, as long as you're the loudest voice.
Yeah, I don't like that idea.
Yeah, that doesn't suit me as well. Like, for as a moviegoer and a reviewer, I don't like that. I don't like having that kind of power, because and this may come as a shock to you, but I agree with you 100%. The artistic approach for anybody doing a film should stay in the hands of the filmmaker and those that, you know, have a say in the creation of the product, i.e. studios, you know, producers, writers, those types of people. Having people having the general public, the general populace have this power to sway a studio's mindset, or at least a filmmaker's mindset, to drastically change something in a film. What if there was an intent there was like an intention for that particular way of that particular character to look that particular design. Like, we don't know. And mind you, there, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you may actually have, you may actually be onto something, Spencer, in terms
of
like...
Why is it so hard to agree with something I said?
Well, because, I mean, you know, Eggman. So...
this is my last episode on this podcast.
No, it isn't. the fact remains is that that kind of power is just, it doesn't belong in our hands. And, you know, I'm actually interested in seeing, like, what the original concept would have looked like.
I've been saying that all week to you.
You know, I mean...
I want to know what the whole movie would look like.
I mean, I do, but I don't.
I do.
I don't...
I'd be willing to buy the Blu-ray.
I don't know if I want to...
I'll buy it if that's...
You can buy whatever you want.
A director's cut with the original design.
It's not even going to have a full cover. It's just going to have this piece of notebook paper with somebody drawing Sanic.
Still worth it.
But I don't know. That goes to like the whole illusion of it all that we may never know. You know, a lot like what people are doing with the whole Snyder cut of Justice League. It may be out there. It may not. Who knows?
Right.
But I don't know. I just really don't think that this kind of power should belong in the hands of the people. We are not a democracy when it comes to films. There are artists and there are intentions that go out when it comes to making films. And people should be able to express themselves without being swayed just because of money, you know?
Yeah.
But
I do agree with that a lot. I will, however, say... Put more stuff on your Blu-rays. If you want me to buy a physical thing, give me something different. I want all the commentary.
Oh,
I want
gosh.
All of the extras. These are the types of things that will help me buy movies.
Well, if you're a studio executive and you listen to our podcast, you've heard our, you know, and we're pretty loud voices. So
you already have it. Just throw it on there. This is what this would have looked like. And then just have like a piece of paper going across the screen with Sanic.
Sanic.
Gecko.
Wow. Well, steering from that train wreck, we're going to let's go ahead and wrap this up and go around the table. I'll go first. The film passes for me.
No, I get it.
It actually was fun to watch. It was a joy to watch it. It was interesting to see Sonic in the real world and him still look like him and everything that it engaged with, all the fun stuff that he did. The little jokes that he made, the little interactions he had with James Marsden, and then the little interactions he had with Dr. Robotnik. It was good. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Oof.
Because of the fact that it's not a masterpiece, it's not. But the bar was so low, like I said, it jumped over it well enough. But there were still a little bit of things that I thought could have been better. So, yeah, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, I am also in the same confusing boat as you. This movie passes, shockingly, it does this well. There's a lot to like from Jim Carrey, who I thought would have just been a nightmare from that trailer. He's really great. Like, if you've seen the trailer, like, kind of throw it out because it doesn't really help you. In like understanding what this actually is, it's a nice kids film, and I actually had fun. And if it were to be in a room I walked in the future, I wouldn't run. I'd actually probably watch it, and that's saying a lot. So I will give it a 3 out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well. That about wraps up another awesome episode, I guess. You know, it's
bizarre that we've ended up here.
It is, because it's like, I don't even know how to wrap this whole thing up. Like, this movie has been kind of like the knot in my stomach, if you will, of like going to the movies, because I didn't want to see this.
Well, I was excited to be like, oh, I'm going to see a train wreck. And then I didn't. And I was like, what? Like, watchable? Like, I can't believe this.
It didn't fill your B-movie, you know,
No.
Hole in Your Heart.
Which is mind-boggling. Like, that trailer, it was like, yeah, this is right up your alley, but nope. It came out with a decent kids movie, and it's shocking. I'm still shocked.
Well, there you go. Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can listen to all of our episodes at filmlosophers.com, where we have over 200 episodes. We just recently did Birds of Prey last week, Lesson 206. It was a great conversation. You should check it out. As well as we got a really great episode that I really want people to check out, and that is our Lesson 200 episode, which was the best of the decade. That is a special episode with several special guests, and you will not be disappointed. I can say that much. But yeah, this was great, and we have an announcement for everybody listening, and that is we are doing another awesome trivia night. I know Spencer's excited, so
yeah, trivia night.
Wow, that was
it's gonna be fun.
That was like the most anticlimactic, like, yeah, sure.
No, it's gonna be good.
It is gonna be great. We are gonna be doing trivia for on The Office March 9th at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. So if you're in the Sacramento area or the Northern California area and you want to make the trek down to Sacramento, head on over to Oblivion Comics and Coffee March 9th at 6:30. We will be there alongside the number one video game podcast in Sacramento, Video Game Bang. And we will be doing a trivia night for the ages. So it'll be fun. Everybody will have a great time, and we all have some great prizes for you if you show up. So come on out, click on the link. It's on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And it's the pinned post at the very top. You can check us out there. But as I said, this was a great show, and this was a very good movie to check out. And as much as the trailer tried to mislead us and push us astray and or lead us astray and whatever, fact remains is that, you know what, this movie was okay, and you should go watch it.
Still shocking to hear you say that out loud, but
I'm shocked that I'm saying it out loud myself. So the great thing about it is it's still very much like, if I was a kid, I would like the heck out of that movie.
Oh yeah, I would so love this.
I think that's the bottom line of it all. And that's the one thing to remember. This movie is made for children. It's made for kids to enjoy. It's not meant to just pander to, as much it would be to pander to the nostalgic factor of adults. It's not what this film does. It definitely leans more towards the kid side of, you know, everything. So, but that about wraps it up. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.